I'm David Brent Johnson. You're listening to Just You and Me on Thanksgiving Day, the all hoagie special that we do every year around Thanksgiving. And I have two guests on the program today to talk about a very interesting discovery. Allison McClanahan, who is a librarian at the Archives of Traditional Music here at Indiana University, and Sean Goodman, who is a clarinetist and a PhD student at Indiana University. Well, thank you so much, both of you guys, for coming by the show today. And you're here to talk about what may be, although I understand it's still kind of the process of ascertaining exactly maybe what this is ongoing, what might be a previously unknown Hoagy Carmichael song. Is that an accurate description?
Yes, that is accurate.
So who found this manuscript and where did you find it and what made you think that that might be a Hoagy song?
Sure. Well, I was actually doing some research in the Archives of Traditional Music, which Allison can tell us a little bit more about here in a minute. But I was doing some research there looking for a different manuscript. So I was looking for a copy of a piece called Mr. Music Master, that was actually ultimately retitled as The Old Music Master.
I
was actually looking for the original manuscript to this piece to find out if those two titles were the same piece. So the folder that Allison sent me to contained the original manuscript to that piece, and that's also where I found the score to this piece, Old Glory. So it was part of the Hoagy Carmichael collection with all of the other manuscripts that were given to the archives from Hoagy's estate. So the assumption is that that would be, you know, the general basis assumption would be that it's Hoagy's music.
So this is a manuscript with music notation and does it have lyrics as well?
Sure. So it's a handwritten manuscript. And it's actually really interesting for many reasons. It has lyrics because it is an orchestration for a chamber orchestra and what looks like a children's choir, an older children's choir. And I say that because the vocal parts are written for boys and girls, labeled that way. And the boys' part is written in bass clef, which would suggest that it's written for changed voice males, so your older high school aged males.
When does this – but there's no – does it look like Hoagy's handwriting? Have you guys been able to kind of ascertain that or figure that out?
Yeah, that's the tricky part. So the very first thing I did was try to compare the handwriting of this piece to the handwriting in the musical manuscripts of his other pieces. And the interesting thing about his musical manuscripts is that there really isn't a lot of consistency in the way that he would write music. And it kind of looks like – the older he got, the sloppier his manuscript got.
I think that's the case for a lot of us and a lot of our writing.
So sometimes he would write things in all capital letters, and sometimes he would write in cursive. So there just isn't a lot of consistency there, so it's hard to compare that by itself. So I've tried to compare other things, and I found other kind of clues, if you will. So I've compared that piece and its small characteristics to other pieces he wrote. So, for instance, one of the interesting clues is in the piece, he writes the words red, white, and blue. Those are part of the lyrics. Mm-hmm. And when he writes the words red, white, and blue, he capitalized the first letter of red, the first letter of white, and the first letter of blue. And then I found a typed lyric sheet to another piece he wrote called Mr. He Kissed Her. And in that one, he writes the words scarlet, white, and green in the list of additional lyrics to that piece. And he capitalized those colors the same way. So that's a potential clue anyway, one of many clues that I've went through to try to authenticate the piece.
You're really having to be a musical detective here, aren't
you? That's exactly what I feel like, and it's so much fun.
I can imagine. Do you have any sense of when this manuscript was written? Is there a date on it or any era that you can maybe associate it with?
Yeah. So the date that's written – okay, so – there, in addition to his handwritten manuscript of the score, there are parts that have been written out by somebody else. So these are the specific parts for each instrument and for voices. And those parts are written by the copyist, and they're stamped by the copyist. And the copyist date on there, I believe, is 1954 or 1952. Mm. So I know that the piece was written before that. And right. I've identified different trends in his writing throughout my research, which suggests that it could have been written anywhere from a couple years to many years before that. So I've done an exhaustive search to try to figure this out based on the neatness of the handwriting. If it is indeed his, suggests to me that it was probably written in the 30s or 40s. The other pieces in that same folder that I was looking in were published and written in the 40s and 50s. So that's my general time frame that I'm looking, is between 1930-ish to 1950, 60-ish.
If you're just tuning in, I'm talking with Sean Goodman, a clarinetist and an IU PhD student, and Allison McClanahan, a librarian at the Archives of Traditional Music at Indiana University, about what may be a previously unknown Hoagie Carmichael song. Allison, I wanted to ask you, this Sean just told us that she came across this manuscript in a folder from the Hoagie Carmichael collection at the Archives of Traditional Music. She was looking for another manuscript and found this one in there. How much Hoagie Carmichael materials does the Archives of Traditional Music hold?
So the Archives of Traditional Music has the largest collection of materials related to Hoagie Carmichael in the world. The collection is somewhere between 3,500 and 4,000 individual pieces.
Wow.
So there is a lot. And that covers sound recordings, film, correspondence, manuscripts, lyric sheets, memorabilia, scrapbooks, newspaper clippings, his personal effects, artwork, just anything that he owned or is about him or by him is just in this massive collection that's open for research.
Has all of it been cataloged? Do you pretty much know everything you have, or are you still kind of in the process of coming across things like this?
So the majority of it is described, but we continue to get new accruals from the family. And so it's kind of in this perpetual process of being described and boxed and managed. But even in the most well-described collections, you can always find something that with a new researcher could kind of come back to life and find a new frame of reference for that piece and open a new discovery or a new mystery that needs to be discovered.
So the overwhelming majority of the collection did come from the Carmichael family. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. So there is kind of some comments in documentation for the collection that some of it did come from other collectors and other researchers earlier on, but there's no, aside from one sheet that I have that lists sheet music donated by a specific person, I haven't been able to come across anything that directly links the provenance of like this manuscript to a certain person, which leads me to believe that it probably came in one of the massive kind of donations from the family.
So if I were to wander into the Archives of Traditional Music, into the public receiving area of it someday and said, I'd like to check out several really interesting Hoagie Carmichael items that you have, what would you suggest I maybe would want to listen to or take a look at?
Oh, gosh. I think it would depend on, you know, your interest. Do you want to look at manuscripts? Do you want to listen to sound recordings? I think the scrapbooks are just kind of like this really amazing snapshot in time because they're newspaper clippings and publicity from that time period. And so, you know, they're all kind of collected for you and you can go chronologically through, you know, the publicity about Hoagie Carmichael and his compositions. If you're interested in his compositions specifically, you know, we have the original manuscripts for some of his better known works, such as Riverboat Shuffle, Washboard Blues. We have sound recordings, demos, so things that were never released. We have demos of those things.
I've heard some of those. I've heard some of the ones that he and Johnny Mercer did in the late 1940s, where it's the songs they'd written and they're just Hoagy's playing the piano and Johnny's singing them. And some of them, one of them became very famous in the Cool, Cool, Cool of the Evening, but others have hardly ever been heard before. And it kind of blows my mind that you can walk in there and listen to things like that.
And like you said, it's really interesting because, you know, he was a musician, he was a composer, he really loved his music. And so there are a number of recordings where he's playing them and he's playing them for someone and they're recording it. And so he's actually like explaining the piece or talking about the piece over the piece. So it's this really interesting snapshot in his life as a composer and as a musician and an entertainer, because he was definitely an entertainer.
Well, I know when Richard Sudhalter was writing his Hoagy Carmichael biography, he spent a lot of time at the Archives for Traditional Music, and that was at least 20 years ago probably. So, and I knew back then they were still, you know, basically unboxing things, and that's when they discovered the what's I guess known as the Jazz Banders manuscript, which is really interesting to me. It's a very early version of Hoagy's memoirs of what would become the Stardust Road, and you can just sit there in the Archives of Traditional Music and read. I think it's a photocopy of the manuscript, but it's 100 plus pages. And
well,
it's interesting.
We have a photocopy of it, and we do have the original typescript as well.
Right, right. Yeah. I think what I was reading was a photocopy because obviously for archival reasons or whatever, you don't want somebody like spilling their coffee on the original manuscript or something. It's a librarian's nightmare, right? Sorry.
No open drinks in the archives.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I can imagine. So how long, Allison, how long have you been working at the Archives of Traditional Music?
So I started in my position as the librarian at the Archives of Traditional Music in January of 2017. So I'm approaching my full second year as librarian there.
It must be – I can only imagine it must be a really fascinating place to work.
Absolutely. I have come across things that I never thought I would see. And every day is a new kind of puzzle or a new discovery for me, which is really exciting. And I love getting to help other researchers who come in that have their own interests, such as Sean, that, you know, you come in and say you're interested in something and – let's see if there's something that, you know, we can help bolster your research.
The Archives of Traditional Music, it's in Morrison Hall.
Yes.
Is that correct? And you're on the third floor? It's been a while since I've been over there.
We're
obviously
on the main floor. So
main floor, okay.
So if you go into the big kind of double door on the front entrance that is facing 3rd Street, you go to the right and we're right down there in that hallway. So we're on the main floor.
The Kinsey Institute's still over there, right?
The archives
still
there, but
okay.
I think the researcher offices have moved to Lindley Hall.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I've always thought Morrison Hall was a really interesting building, had some of the more interesting archival collections on campus. I've only been to the Archives of Traditional Music, but I know that it's a place that I've heard famous people have wandered through there sometimes, people like Bob Dylan or whatever. These may be apocryphal stories. I don't know. Coming in there to listen to some of the really unique recordings and unusual things that the archives have. And obviously this Hoagy manuscript is one of them. If you're just tuning in, my guests today on the program are Allison McClanahan, who is a librarian at IU's Archives of Traditional Music, and Sean Goodman, who is a clarinetist and a PhD student at Indiana University. Sean, I wanted to ask you what might happen, musically speaking, with this piece. If you are able to determine that it is a Hoagy Carmichael song, then what next? Where does it go from there?
Well, that's a great question. One of the first things I wanted to do was to hear what it sounded like. So I conduct a summer youth orchestra program called the Symphonic Youth Orchestra of Greater Indianapolis, and I asked for some volunteers from that group to play some of the music for me, and then I contacted the Indianapolis Children's Choir. I used to be involved in that when I was younger, and talked to one of the directors there, Ruth Dwyer, and asked her, would you have any students that might be willing to sing this for me? And she was really excited to assist with this. And so she talked to Amy Huffley, who's a one of the other choir directors there for the ICC. So I got the youth orchestra to record the instrumental parts and the choir to record the vocal parts. And I conducted both of them. We mixed them together just to hear what they sound like. Of course, we're not selling the recording or anything like that. That's not an appropriate thing to do. But I was able to hear what it sounded like, and I presented the recording at my presentation of the research so people could hear it. And there's a lot of interesting things about the composition that you may not really catch just looking at it, but listening to it, it was more obvious that it certainly has jazz influence, although it is written as a patriotic piece with, you know, what would kind of look like more of a classical arrangement of, you know, instruments and voices. But, like, it'll have melody being played over a pizzicato walking bass line, which sounds like a jazz group, you know, with a walking bass line and melody over it. And then the chords that are in the piece are really kind of crunchy, dissonant, jazzy chords, even though, you know, you've got on the snare drum, you know. So it's a really interesting arrangement. So, you know, where does it go from here? That's something that, you know, Allison and, you know, Hoagie's son, you know,
Hoagie Bakes Carmichael. Yeah, I was going to ask if he, what is he, has he offered any kind of input on all of this, or have you been in a lot of communication with him about it?
We have not been in a lot of communication with him. So early on in this research, I asked Allison, is there some reason, you know, that we would have this manuscript if it wasn't Hoagie's, you know? And so she went to Hoagie Bix and asked him about the manuscript, if he knew anything about it. And this is an interesting thing, but he said, I've never heard of it. It's not in my database. And he said, I doubt very much that it is by Hoagie Carmichael.
Interesting.
So I asked Allison, you know, well, why would we have this in the archives? You know, is there any reason that it would be here if it wasn't his? And her suggestion was he could have acquired it from a musical friend if he really liked the piece. Maybe he asked to have it. That seems unlikely, in her own words. And, you know, other reasons I've kind of brainstormed, perhaps somebody wrote it and asked him to edit it or get his opinion about it. All of these things are possible. It's also possible that somebody, I don't know, commissioned him to write it, so he didn't write his name on it. There's literally no composer written
no
on
authorship.
The piece. Yeah, so it's still somewhat mysterious, but again, putting together these clues, there's some red colored pencil markings on the manuscript that I've also found the same red colored pencil on other manuscripts that are confirmed as his. So
do you think it was I wonder if it was written, whoever wrote it, whether it was Hoagie or somebody else, do you think maybe it was written in the during World War II era, given the sort of patriotic slant of it?
So that's definitely possible. There's also another kind of theory I'm working on right now. And again, my own personal guess is that it was written in the 30s based on the quality of the handwriting and compared to other pieces that I know were written in the 30s of his. But again, it's hard to confirm that. Now, Allison had showed me a version that Hoagie wrote of the Star-Spangled Banner. And,
interesting.
Yeah, okay. No, this is cool too. So she knew about this, and it was published, I believe it was in the 60s when he finally – well, not – okay, let me rephrase that. The article that he wrote associated with the piece was published in the 60s. And in that article, he said about 30 years ago, which would have been in the 30s, there had been some conversation in the country about the Star-Spangled Banner, specifically that it's hard to sing and people didn't really like it. This is not a value judgment. This is simply something that was a conversation that was taking place in the 30s about the piece. And there were many composers, Richard Rodgers, lots of people that weighed in this article. And they were, you know, some people were saying, I'd never sing it. It's horrible. other people were saying, you know, gosh, I really like America the Beautiful. Why don't we use that instead? And Hoagy said, you know, because of this conversation, I've decided to write an alternate version, but I haven't published it because basically he said, I'm not really confident in the quality of it, but I'd love everybody's input. So he put a lead sheet to his altered version of the Star Spangled Banner in this article and asked for people's input. And so, again, this suggests possibly that in the 30s, he was thinking in terms of patriotic melodies, maybe even looking for an alternate national anthem.
So, yeah, because this is called Old Glory, right?
Called Old Glory.
So I don't want to be sensationalistic here. I want to observe journalistic mores and such.
Sure.
But basically, it sounds to me like what you're saying is possibly what you guys might have come across here is an attempt by Hoagy Carmichael to write a kind of alternative national anthem. Is that?
Well, the Star Spangled Banner arrangement was exactly that. That was his attempt at an alternative national anthem. This is actually in some ways incredibly hard to sing and perform. So I don't know that this was his attempt at something that might be easier to perform than the Star Spangled Banner.
Okay.
But he may have been thinking in terms of patriotic melodies, you know.
Sure.
The instrumentation is really interesting. There are no French horns in the orchestra parts. There are three clarinets, a bass clarinet, three flute parts. He asked the trombones to play horn-like in it. There are four trumpet parts. There are four separate violin parts, and the choral parts at times break into eight-part harmony, which is tricky for vocalists to do, especially high school age. So, I don't think and if it were written intended for adults, I don't think that he would have labeled the vocal parts boys and girls.
Right, right. So, is there anything that already exists in Hoagy's catalog, musically speaking, that this piece reminds you of a little bit? Are there certain flourishes or devices or other musical techniques or approaches that remind you of certain other Hoagy songs?
Sure. Well, okay. Without getting too technical, the short answer is yes. And I've done a harmonic analysis and kind of compared his chord voicings and chord progressions in this piece to other pieces that he's written. The piece that I mentioned at the beginning of the program, The Old Music Master, was actually one that I was working with at the time, so it's easy to compare that with this particular piece. The original handwritten manuscript for The Old Music Master was simply a melody with chord changes and piano voicings for the chords, okay? Obviously, the instrumentation is very different for Old Glory, but I was able to compare a few things. And I found some patterns, some trends that if they weren't both written by Hoagy Carmichael, the person that wrote Old Glory was consciously trying to emulate his writing because they are so similar. So there are certain chords that suggest that the person that wrote it was not a classical composer, that this is somebody who wrote jazz music. When I compared the chord voicings in Old Glory to the Old Music Master, I found what I would call, even as a jazz musician, I would call them cluster chords. They're just very dissonant chords that I can't really put an accurate label on in both pieces. And they would both be written, and then they would both descend chromatically in a similar fashion in both pieces.
Okay.
So that was really obvious to me. And in both of those examples, he would double the melody line in the top of those voicings. So that's pretty clear. But then I also found something else. And that is, he would take the melody line and it would be on a major chord. He would descend the melody line from the root of the chord down a whole step, which would make the major chord into what we would call a dominant seventh chord. So it goes from being a chord of rest or resolution to being a chord of motion. But he didn't just do that in the chords. He did that in the melody line, which makes it – it gives it a whole new kind of flavor. It's kind of an interesting thing. We don't really hear that often. It happens. But to see it in both of those pieces – suggests, again, it's probably the same person and it's probably the same time period, because I looked for those types of patterns in some of the other pieces. In his later pieces, I found different things, you know. So Mr. Music Master is definitely his manuscript. That is confirmed. The Old Glory has such similar chord voicings and chord progressions. The other thing I found is there are lots of chords written – actually, nearly every chord was written in root position in Old Glory, which basically means you take the root of the chord and just build it up from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And in classical music, that's not done very often.
Right.
Usually classical composers get – I don't know. I call it creative. And they write these chords in inversions. So it's not always the root of the chord in the bottom. And by doing that, they avoid things that are undesirable in classical music, such as things like parallel fifths and parallel fourths, that are things that sound a little too dissonant for your average classical music listener's ear. But in jazz, they're perfectly acceptable to have the parallel motion, we call it. And there's a lot of parallel motion in Old Glory.
Well, if I were on a musical jury, you've done a very good case of convincing me, of persuading me that Hoagy Carmichael is guilty of writing this song. I know it's not the way you're framing it, but no, but that sounds like you're making a very persuasive case. Allison, I wanted to ask you how many – this is a case where – You don't know yet if it is a Hoagy Carmichael song. Sean has obviously done a lot of deep drilling to determine whether it is or not, and is still in that process. How many unrecorded Hoagy manuscripts are there over at the ATM, roughly speaking? Do you know, like, I mean, songs that you know are Hoagy songs, but that haven't really been recorded or haven't been heard, or maybe I guess maybe how many in terms of manuscripts and maybe demos, how many Hoagy songs are over there that we as general listeners wouldn't know about?
I haven't done that analysis. That's a really interesting project and something I might consider, because I think that would be really interesting to, you know, Hoagy scholars and, you know, jazz listeners in general. But at this moment, I really can't even say roughly, because I haven't done that kind of research.
Just curious. Yeah, I don't even know how many. I mean, I'm trying to remember if Richard Sudhalter did an estimate of how many songs he's thought to have written overall. I mean, I know it was in the hundreds, but I can't remember even the rough number that's what I I thought it was around 600 songs maybe. And I know that you know, when I was doing a work on a show about the Mercer and Carmichael songs, there were several in there that had never been recorded. Some that had only been recorded once, maybe by artists that you wouldn't even normally associate with recording a Hoagy Carmichael song. So it sounds like musicians could potentially there might be riches to explore and record over at the Archives of Traditional Music when it comes to Hoagy manuscripts and songs.
Absolutely, as I said, any collection is going to have, you know, those jewels. And IU is an amazing institution that has so many different archives and special collections on campus. Mm-hmm. And the ATM, the acronym for the Archives of Traditional Music, we're so fortunate to have this amazing large collection of materials related to Hoagy by Hoagy. And so anyone who's, you know, curious about Hoagy or wants to kind of do those kinds of puzzles or discoveries, or, you know, likes to work on mysteries or wants to be a musical detective, is more than welcome to, you know, come to the archives and say, you know, I'm interested in doing this. What is there? And we can go from there.
Well, thank you so much, you guys, for stopping by the show today. You're going to have to check in again if there are further discoveries to be made, or if there's further elaboration on this particular manuscript. I would love to chat with both of you again. So thank you so much, Allison McClanahan, a librarian at the IU Archives of Traditional Music, and Sean Goodman, who is a clarinetist and a PhD student at Indiana University. Thank you so much, you guys, for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Just You and Me on WFIU, Public Radio for Indiana, on Thanksgiving Day and Hoagy Carmichael's birthday today. We've got more Hoagy music coming up in just a few moments.